to get to find out how you all saw the Crenshaw County experience.
Well, it's interesting. It is interesting. I was pretty young. I was 18 when I went down there, and I think I always wonder whether I learned a lot more than I did, or is that the right way to put it? Whether it was more a personal adventure than a political adventure. And I only say that because of the disappointment that the entire civil rights movement has proved to be over the time for me. I mean, I just feel it is. But in terms of how it affected me, I would say pretty substantially. I've pretty much done something in that realm all my life. I mean, I was a criminal defense attorney for 35 years and almost entirely indigent defense. And then now I'm retired, and now I'm the head of two boards of affordable housing, which is the same battle all over again. So it had a great effect on me, but I'm not convinced we were. I mean, I don't mean just we. I mean everything from the summer before through. I think the war kind of wiped out the civil rights movement in many regards. And bled it of its energy, and it slowly has. Now I know people say, well, you know, we've had a black Secretary of State and a black president, and so on. And I say, yeah, but.
But that wasn't what we were there for.
That wasn't why I was there. That's really right. I mean, you know, we have as segregated and as malevolent a culture now as we did then, I think, in many respects. It's a little more sophisticated, but I'm not sure that it's changed that much. So I'm not the great trumpeter of our successes. I don't know. Where have you been all this time?
Oh, where was I? Well, you know, I was SCLC staff, so
yeah,
scope
sure.
was not the first thing I had done for SCLC.
Right.
And before that, I was 2 years with the Corps.
Right.
So after Crenshaw, I worked in Hale County, Alabama, and then ended up in Grenada, Mississippi for 9 months on a very long and very dramatic, I'll put it that way, dramatic project.
Well, I had kind of a dramatic event in Mississippi, too.
Oh, yeah?
Well, a year after, well, 6 months after we left, I don't know how I got. I went to.
Oh, you should say your name when you speak, so that the transcriber. I'm Bruce. And
oh, I'm Dick. Oh.
But each time you speak, try and remember, because it'll help the transcriber.
I thought that was a cup of coffee.
It's a cup of recording.
I left. I was going to Oberlin College when we were here.
Right, I remember that.
And when I went up that next winter, I'm trying to remember the. Who sponsored it or what? There were a lot of Oberlin kids involved, but we drove some trucks down to Mississippi. There was a boycott, Christmas boycott going on in Hattiesburg and a number of other places.
Natchez.
Mm-hmm. Natchez. And,
yeah.
But when I got down there, I got drafted into going with another group up to the little town of Kosciuszko,
uh-huh.
which is in Philadelphia County, which is uh-huh. well known for it. And that was like, that would have been 15 months after.
No, Philadelphia County is different than Neshoba County, whose capital is Philadelphia.
I'm talking about Neshoba.
Okay.
I mean, that's where we were.
Okay. Yeah.
We were in a little town of Kosciuszko.
Okay.
And anyway, we were at their Freedom House one night, and the Klan came through with many guns, and I got shot in the head, and another guy got shot in the chest.
Wow.
All sorts of, there's actually lots of funny stories that come out of it, but that was what, five months after mm-hmm. we were in Crenshaw County. But So I was just asking David where he went. He went back, you were at Chicago. University
yeah, I was at Chicago, and I was in theoretical math.
Right, I remember that.
And about 3 years later, I dropped out and switched to computer programming, which is applied math.
Yeah, but and a good place to be in the early 70s.
Yeah, that is, so I've been doing mathematical programming for 47 years. And part of the reason I switched is I realized that this theoretical math was very interesting, but it just wasn't not connected to the real world at all.
Yeah.
The mathematicians prove these theorems and it has no effect on anybody. So I feel a lot better doing applied math because it helps. That is, for mainly I've been doing statistical programming, which gives statisticians or gives researchers tools to make decisions. For instance, does this new drug help the condition better than the old drug? And it might be just dandruff or it might be bone cancer. So it's either helping people feel a little better or saving lives.
And what do you do now?
Well, I'm retired now. And I run the Civil Rights Movement Veterans website.
Oh, is that your...
I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Yeah, no, I am.
And I'm busier now than when I was working, that's for sure. after I left Mississippi,
yeah,
I got involved in the anti-war movement.
We all did.
Yeah, went to San Francisco mm-hmm. State. Had a big, long student strike, very, very dramatic student strike. Then I got involved in supporting GIs who were resisting the war.
Coffee house.
Yeah, I went to, I worked in Asia with the U.S. Marines who were resisting the war. When I came back, I got sucked into what I can only most charitably describe as a communist cult, which took me 2 years to escape,
yeah.
Well, and left me quite anti-leftist, not conservative, but not a Marxist.
Yeah.
And then I was a founding member and national officer of the Writers Union for a long time. And in the later years, the last 30 years, from 80 to 2010, I was a tech writer in high tech, and that's how I made my living.
Here in Atlanta or elsewhere?
San Francisco.
Oh, in San Francisco.
But you know, I have a much more benign view of the freedom movement than you expressed. I think we did accomplish quite a bit. We didn't solve all the problems.
No.
But I think we certainly changed the culture in this country. I think we certainly changed the South. I mean, the South was a feudal, almost a different country. We ended overt, legally enforced segregation. We did end the legal barriers against voting, which they're now trying to put back, but mm-hmm. okay, but they're having a hard time doing. And I think most importantly is that we really changed the culture around race in this country, particularly among white people. When I was a kid, sitting around a middle class table, it was normal and commonplace to tell racist jokes and racist stories, to use racist language in the political discourse of politicians on campaign. They would routinely use racial stereotypes and racist language. Now, a couple years ago, some billionaire basketball owner was caught saying something vaguely racist, wasn't even intense,
yeah.
and they forced him to give up his fucking team. Well, to me, that's a change in the culture. That's a deep
yeah.
change.
Oh, yeah. For instance, this is David speaking. Say, when Jackie Robinson was coming up,
mm-hmm.
the fans yelled, you know what, at him. the opposing manager did too, the opposing players did too.
They threw shit at him, they spit on him.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, that reminds me of a little anecdote about Hank Greenberg.
Mm-hmm.
Hank Greenberg's last year was 1947, which was Jackie Robinson's first year, and Greenberg had been traded from Detroit to Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
So in a game against the Dodgers, they collided at first base. Greenberg was about 6'4". Jackie Robinson, I think, was 5'9". So Robinson fell to the ground. Greenberg reached down, helped him up, and said, "You know, they yelled awful things at me when I was coming up. I got through it. I'm sure you're going to get through it, too." And then Greenberg heard what they were yelling, and he realized he had given himself, he said later, he had given himself a lot of credit for not reacting, but he had gave Robinson 10 times as much credit for not reacting.
Yeah,
well, I'm not as sanguine as you, but on the other hand, I accept most of what you say there. And there.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to come back to the meta discussion, but I'm curious if you have any recollections or memories of Crenshaw County.
Oh, sure. But not as many as I'm not quite sure why not as many. Maybe because I'm 70 or 69. But
a veritable child.
Yeah. Well, you guys are way. You're 71.
It's two.
Two. Okay. Well, the Ware family is what I most remember, and uh-huh. I was wondering if anyone had ever been in touch with the Ware family, which I have not. But
no,
I would.
I heard from Havard Richburg about 10 years ago. He passed a couple of years ago, but we got back in touch just briefly, and he was pretty much the same as ever. You know, he kept on going and. He said, you know, his memory of the Scope Project is that was the height of the freedom movement in Crenshaw County. That, he said, we kept on going, and they did. They had boycotts and protests and tear gas and all that kind of stuff. But he said that it was the summer of 65 that was really the peak. And I felt good about that.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah.
It is nice to hear.
Oh, you know, the Southern Courier newspaper is online.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, www.southerncourier.org.
Oh,
and the two words Southern Courier just run together.
Small print, no space.
And in an article in very late August, after we left, the journalist Robert Lee Stringer, I think might have been in high school then, but he wrote that the civil rights workers have left. He quoted one woman as saying, "Those civil rights workers were wonderful. I wish they could stay a year." He quoted one man as saying, "I think they did us hardly any good at all, but I'll give them credit for trying." So here are two totally opposite opinions.
The polls.
And he quoted a store owner as saying, "Yep, from now on, I'm serving everybody."
A white store owner.
White store owner, yeah. And he mentioned that three restaurants were now integrated.
Remember, we got remember that mob that attacked us the first time we went up?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that is, we were in separate groups. They attacked you first, and then we wandered in and they attacked us too.
Yeah.
And Brantley, I remember Brantley for some reason.
Oh, that's where we got chased out of.
That's where
were you in that car that he was driving?
Yeah, I was in the car.
Yeah, well, Brantley was... You know, the first time I was in the county before you,
right?
Yeah,
and I didn't go to the orientation. The first time they took me around the county when I first arrived, and my first view of Brantley was there were only white people on the street, and all the white men had a gun on their hip, and mm-hmm. and that was unusual even for Alabama. Where most of the white men walked around packing a pistol just as part of their ordinary everyday life.
Hmm.
That was a bad sign.
Yeah.
Have you read the new To Kill a Mockingbird sequel, prequel?
No, I haven't. Have you?
I have. And I wasn't, I mean, there is, as a series of vignettes, a couple of them are very good, but as a book, it doesn't hold together. But the interesting thing is, you know, she's from, I don't remember the little town, but it's just about 20 miles from...
Yeah.
From.
I think it's in, she was, it's Clark County, I think.
I think it's Clark County.
Yeah.
It's only like 20, 25 miles away.
Yeah.
You know, and so I was, my wife read it and I said, that is a town that is recognizable to me.
Yes, it is. Yes,
well, because in the second book, you know, Atticus Finch is not the great hero that he's made out to be in To Kill a Mockingbird, and he becomes the interlocutor or the oversees a meeting with the White Citizens Council in the courthouse. So it becomes...
That lowers my enthusiasm for reading it.
Well, it is. It's a totally different book in many regards. Where did you get that coffee?
It's not coffee, it's an empty cup.
No, but there is...
If you go all the way down there, there's the ballroom behind the registration table.
And is there coffee there?
There was.
I would really like that. I've been traveling all day. I'll be right back.
Okay.
And where do you live?
Iowa.
Iowa?
Iowa City.
Oh, you're... Oh, okay. All right.
Well, I grew up in Grinnell. I live in Iowa City. I have for... you know, after I left college, I spent... two or three years in Ann Arbor, and I did lots of jobs, and I drove truck, and I harvested cherries, and I built houses, and I did what everybody else did in 1972 and 3. And then I ended up just saying, you know, I guess I ought to do something remunerative too.
Yeah.
So I went to law school.
Well, that was the choice.
Yeah.
Wow. So do you remember anything from Crenshaw?
What do
you remember?
I remember getting up to speak in a church full of people and having severe stage fright, but talking myself out of it. I have no idea what I said. I spoke a few times in churches, and all I remember is I wrote some ideas on note cards. I didn't write out a speech. And since I didn't have a printed copy of the speech, I just threw them out afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So I don't remember.
But it was encouraging people to register to vote, I'm sure.
Yeah. Obviously, it was. Yeah, but I don't remember how I certainly did not try to engage in a soaring rhetoric.
Yeah.
Would have been not my style. Yeah, let's see. Gee. Yeah, there was one tiny little thing, namely Dunbar and I were walking in downtown Luverne, and a nurse came out of a drugstore, took a look at us, and put on her sunglasses upside down.
You shook her up?
Yeah.
I'm all shook up. Elvis. Yeah. Yeah, downtown Luverne.
Yeah, right, downtown.
Yes, indeed, downtown Luverne. Boy, somebody else hears that phrase, downtown Luverne, and they'll have a completely different mental picture than our reality.
Right. Yeah, another little thing I remember is we're coming in from the northeast at night. We had to go a few blocks south and one block west. And we would sort of look toward the west on the first block. And if we saw a gang of white guys hanging out, we'd go one more block south before we turned west. Yeah, we didn't want to go driving right by a whole gang of people.
Good
at night.
Thinking, yeah.
Huh. Yeah, and I talked a little while ago with Al Campan, whom you don't know. He was from, it was in college in Michigan, and they told him that if he could get to Chicago, he could get a ride to Atlanta with me. So I drove from Chicago to Atlanta. A lot of it was overnight. He said I drove the whole way, which, if so, was not very bright. I probably would have exhausted myself.
Oh, we were young then. You could drive. You could drive all night at that age. I did it all the time. You know, it was just, you know. Now we look. Now we think about trying to do it. Drive 6 hours now, and oh my God.
Yeah. Our daughter Elisa was in college in San Jose. She transferred back to Los Angeles, and the drive up to San Jose was pretty tiring. Mm-hmm. On Interstate 5, totally boring.
It is.
There's nothing there.
You know, I normally now, I don't do 5. I use 99. It's not as crowded and it's not as boring. Uh-huh. And it's freeway all the way, so. And the traffic is, what I don't like about 5 is A, it's boring.
Yeah.
But B, you're just, it's white knuckle driving because it is totally crowded and you're driving at the speed limit or higher. And the trucks on either side of you. 99 is a lot easier to drive. Just, you know, my opinion. Ah, he found it.
Well, they didn't have any down there, but I talked to the lady in here. It was wonderful.
So
have you ever been back to Crenshaw County, to Laverne or to Brantley? Or?
No. Well,
I... You stayed longer than we did, but...
Not that much longer.
Not that much.
Pretty much I left at around the same time everyone else did. I drove through it once. I had to, you know, about 15 years ago. And actually, that was the first time, I guess that was around, what was that, 2005, so 10 years ago. And this was my first time back in the South since I left Mississippi in 67. And I drove through Crenshaw. I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any contacts. I tried to find the old Freedom House, couldn't find it. I think it had fallen down, or the termites had eaten it or something. But you know, it was, you know, I'm very interested in the overall evaluation of the movement that you raised. And as I was driving through, I was driving up from Florida, and I had to go to Montgomery and Selma. And so I was cutting up through, and, you know, through all the area where we had worked, you know, in Selma and so forth. And I'm driving along on the back roads, and I'm noticing that I'm not seeing any of those utterly impoverished shacks. You know, for me, the violence and the arrests and all that were, of course, very dramatic. But what affected me more than all of that was the incredible poverty. And that had a more profound effect on me, I think, than anything else. And so I'm driving along, and I'm not seeing any of these. And I'm not on a main highway. I'm in, little country roads and stuff. And I'm saying, wow, this is really great. Look, you know, this poverty. And then I'm noticing, well, wait a minute, I'm not seeing any cotton. A little patch here and a little patch there. But it's mostly timber. and dairy and fish farms.
Yep.
Gee.
And what I came to realize is the reason that there are no longer those shotgun shacks is all those sharecroppers were thrown off the land.
They're all in the cities.
And they are the impoverished homeless in the northern urban, or they became the homeless in the urban, particularly the northern urban. So it wasn't that we alleviated their poverty, it's that they were driven off the land. Well, overall, that means that the overall rate of poverty has gone up. I mean, it's less poverty because the work, you know, But I wouldn't call that a smashing victory.
No, that's true.
On the other hand, for the people, for the black folk who are living there, I mean, it's night and day. You can look in this hotel. Who's staying here? Mm-hmm. Who's working here? In what jobs they're working here?
Did you ever get involved in any other activities?
Oh, well, okay, yeah. The open housing marches in Chicago.
Sure.
And then anti-war activities till about 1972. And now I'm active in my union. That is, at UCLA, I joined a union. Computer programmers were not organized, we're not represented yet, and still are not. We're still trying to get that done. But the union does represent healthcare workers, research workers, and technical workers.
Is that a UAW union?
It's CWA.
Uh-huh.
But it's part of AFL-CIO. And we protest against university policies when they're unfair. And then there are just individual cases when some supervisor makes some arbitrary decision which goes against the union contract. Most of those are settled very easily. The steward talks to the person who's affected, calls human resources calls the supervisor, says, you can't do that, and finished. Yeah, we also do have an attorney on retainer for difficult stuff.
Were you in the Gage Park marches in Chicago? Is that where you were?
Gage Park?
Gage Park, yeah.
I don't think so. That is, the open housing marches in the summer of 66 and 67 were two kinds. One, most of them were mass marches, like 50,000, 100,000 people.
Well, that was up in Garfield Park then.
Oh, you were on the Garfield Park?
Yeah.
Well, the ones where a few hundred would march into a white neighborhood like Gage Park were very hairy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you were on any of those, but...
I don't... It doesn't sound familiar.
Oh, you would have remembered.
Okay. and then there were other marches. There were a few cases where there was no mass march.
Uh-huh.
Instead, we broke up into groups of 5 or 10 and picketed real estate offices.
Right.
From redlining practices and
blockbusting.
Blockbusting.
Yeah, that is a block that is the white-black border would advance like one or two blocks a year.
Yeah.
Well, didn't it stopped at 63rd or the Midway, didn't it? Pretty much.
Yeah, I guess. Right. Couldn't go south.
Well, the real estate board decided which blocks, and if the depending on the politics of it, they would. But so you were on the Garfield Park march.
Well, I lived in Chicago off and on, and I worked in the steel mills in Indiana Harbor.
Huh.
And I lived at 62nd and Woodlawn when I was doing that.
Oh, gee, I lived at 60-something, it was just south of the Midway. It might have been on Woodlawn.
Well, it would be the same general block, but that was probably 67 maybe. I don't know, one summer in time. But that was, it seems to me, wasn't that about the time Jesse Jackson was organizing the...
Just starting up the Operation Breadbasket. Well, it started here in Atlanta, and then he opened up a
you
chapter.
You kept up the northern prong of that.
Yeah. But you know, if you look at those open housing that whole campaign, the initial thing it didn't look like it won very much, but within a couple of years, that whole blockbusting thing was over.
Really?
Because there was still general segregation, but the border got fuzzy instead of getting total, like a knife.
Yeah.
Which meant that the people that opened up competition among landlords, that when the blocks were rigid, the landlords could charge, they generally charged 20% more for a black ghetto apartment than for a much better white apartment. Uh-huh. And they couldn't do that once the borders became fuzzy.
Hmm.
So there wasn't a lot of blacks moving off into the deep white areas, but they began to have some control over the expansion of the ghetto, and it meant that the rents went down. Of course, now they're going back up with gentrification, but that's...
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was a big deal at the University of Chicago, because the university would buy up black neighborhoods and tear down the housing to build some university building.
Yeah. Yeah, Columbia the same.
Uh-huh.
University of San Francisco State?
Well, San Francisco State, not so much. Because, first of all, it was surrounded by a white middle class homeowners. And they just, you know, they weren't going to stand for that. But San Francisco State also had enough land. I mean, they're now crowded, but back then they weren't. San Francisco State was a whole nother story, so that was...
So what have you heard from Paula? What is she doing?
She lives in Hawaii, in Honolulu. She is married, and I forget what she does. She works at some off, you know, some white-collar job. She's here. She seems somewhat reticent in terms of talking, but you'll see her.
I'm trying to think. Is there somebody?
Carol Richardson passed.
Oh, I didn't know that. We both didn't know that.
Yeah, and we haven't been able to locate Dunbar Reed.
Right. You just put the sign. Where's Brick?
And nobody was able to find him. There was some theory that he was living in Guam for a while. We had an address for somebody named Dunbar Reed in Guam, but they bounced back. No, this would be more recently. Came back, not known at this address, and that was the only lead we had. You remember him in his little red sports car?
Oh, that was the red sports car, yes.
Sent it back to Atlanta.
Yeah, that was too provocative. Yeah, he was a kick. We have a couple pictures. We have some on the website. I gave you the card for. You know about the website?
Yeah, sure, yeah. Sure.
So we have a in the photo album. We have a scope section, and in the scope section, I posted a few Crenshaw County pictures.
I don't remember anybody having a camera in those days.
Well, we didn't have one regular, but I borrowed somebody's Brownie, you know. I mean, and you can see the quality of the picture reflects that.
No, I was just laughing. Now you'd have 2,000 pictures because everybody would have a cell phone.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think we did.
So.
Are you married?
Yeah, married. We have two grown daughters. No prospect of grandchildren yet. How about you?
I'm married. My wife and I don't have children. So we have horses.
Uh-huh. You have horses?
Yeah, I live on a farm, so I have them.
How about you?
No children. Nephews. I have nephews, but no children of my own. So
I have that, nephews.
I hear they're very expensive.
So. Yeah.
And they give you a lot of heartache, so, you know. So.
Yeah, I showed my wife and kids your interview, and I'd say they were pretty surprised.
Had you not ever talked to them about it?
I had talked to them about it, but actually I told my wife the story of the car chase when we met, which was 1975. As I said, I worried that my memory might not be accurate. And there is his description, which is awfully close to what I remembered.
So what did they say? What was their, what, I'm curious.
Oh, sort of, gee, wow, Dad, I didn't know that.
What about you, Dick? Did you ever?
I don't talk about it much, I don't think. I haven't.
That's interesting. You know, we do these, you know, well, I, 15 years ago, we formed a group in the Bay Area called Bay Area Veterans of the Civil Rights Group Movement. And so we've been meeting monthly ever since. So this has been a big part of our lives, is doing, looking back. And we, so we run workshops and stuff like that for activists, not for the general public, but for people who were involved. And it's very interesting that some of the people involved, well, almost everyone said it really changed who I was. It really made a difference in my life. It formed me. It put me on a path. But then you take all of those people, and they're divided into two groups. One group says that, and you can see in their life that it did affect them. But they say, I never talked about my experiences in the Southern Freedom Movement with anybody until I came to this meeting.
You know Matt Rinaldi?
Yeah, yeah. He's not been active in this, but yeah, I know him.
Matt
yeah.
and I mean, he went to Oberlin. He was like a year behind me.
He was somewhat active in the GI thing.
Very much in the coffee house movement.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've been doing sort of what, when we went, there was a group. Actually, they were older than I was. Let's see. Anyway, they from Oberlin, there were about 15 kids who went down in winter of 64-5 to Mississippi, and they rebuilt a church that had been burned down. You remember all those
churches? Yeah, I remember
burnings?
That. I remember groups coming down to rebuild.
And they just had a 50-year anniversary, and they put up a big plaque, and it's on the Freedom Trail or something, and Matt was pretty instrumental in putting that together.
Good for him.
So
anyway, half the people didn't ever talk about it, and the other half tended to tell their family the stories and stuff. So it's just interesting.
I keep calling fall in the first half.
Huh?
I kind of fall in the first half.
Yeah. A lot of people do. Some people didn't talk about it because we realize now that they were that was a symptom of PTSD for them. That talking about it was just too painful, or in some cases, what had happened to them was too painful to talk about. At least talk about with people who had not been there, who wouldn't understand. Other people, it was too painful because it was the high point of their life, and when they left, they felt enormous grief and a sense of loss. Hmm. And other people felt a sense of huge guilt when they left.
Mm-hmm. That I can see.
Huh?
Yeah, that I can see.
Yeah, I certainly felt some.
Yeah. So it's very interesting to see, you know, people's the different reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I don't, I mean, I live in a pretty progressive community. It is a very progressive community, notwithstanding it's not a progressive state. but it's a university town and a hospital town.
Mm-hmm.
I have found, I guess it falls into your category three, that even to mention it embarrasses me, because people see it as something more, I'm going to say the word, more heroic than I see it. I saw it as more, you know, what we did and what was important or whatever, but I didn't. Nowadays, if somebody lapses into sort of congratulatory adoration, I just get out of there so fast.
I
just like, no. You know? I guess that's part of it for me.
No, I agree. You know, I have the same feeling of, you know, oh, come on, you know. But what I do is I deflect it because I want to talk about the politics and how they impact today. So I don't retreat, but I also don't accept the.
I just came to give you a hug.
Oh, hello.
So I adjusted my attitude.
Jeez.
Oh,
you,
I
you
see.
You just sit around and when you come
substances.
In and hug you.
Oh, you
want
to hug me? Are you Crenshaw?
Yeah.
Were you in Crenshaw? You
use
a hug. Were you in Crenshaw?
Yeah.
Well, you deserve a hug too.
Yeah, this is.
I was in Wilcox. Uh-huh.
You can join us. This is the only part of Alabama that came together.
You know, in my morning group, just kind of coinkadinkly, or maybe they had planned it, there were people who had gone through Greensboro, because remember Greensboro, they like called people to come to the barricades,
yes,
kind of thing. And so, did you go to Greensboro?
No, I
didn't.
Hale,
yeah,
County.
So we actually had three people who had, at different times, been there, and we did a little Tom Gilmore tribute. It was really
uh-huh.
Fun. And some of it was even videotaped.
Oh.
But I got to meet somebody, and I got somebody who just blah, blah, blah. But I just wanted, I just came basically to tell you, I went up to my room, and I called my husband, and he gave me a talking to. He said,
good.
Get a grip. You're doing the books on you in half an hour. Put on your happy face and your happy shoes. And your girl panties, and just go downstairs.
All right. But don't expect the book signing to begin on time.
No. Okay. No, I have now released. We're back 50 years ago.
Okay. It is what it is. It's the isness of the situation.
The isness. Well, I'm glad you guys are.
So do you still have a blue jean jacket?
I don't have a blue jean jacket. I have a black denim jacket.
No, you need a denim.
The chore coat?
The chore coat.
No, I don't. You know, when I had a bad experience. So when I left Mississippi, I went to San Francisco State and, of course, joined SDS. And I was very proud of my 4 years in the Civil Rights Movement. But the SDS at San Francisco State was dominated by a political faction called Progressive Labor Party.
Oh, yeah.
Who were hardcore Marxists. So they immediately tried to recruit me. And I was not recruitable. As soon as they realized I wasn't recruitable, they said, okay, this guy may be an adversary.
Yeah.
So they totally trashed anything that had to do with the civil rights movement, that is bourgeois, reformist, integrationist, and they absolutely made it impossible for me to even say that I had worked for Martin Luther King. Nonviolence, counter-revolutionary. So after that, of course, I never wore that chore jacket again.
Yeah, POP there. Was that Steve Clark? Was that his name?
I don't remember any of their names.
I remember those.
Bill Epton was like one of the Lord High Poobahs, but. Yeah, and then a few years later, I allowed myself to get sucked into another different one. So.
Which one?
Probably never heard of it went through many different names. It's most well known as Democratic Workers Party.
Oh.
And it was not democratic, it was not composed of workers, and it sure as hell was no party. So.
Huh. Yeah, there were similar names, like Socialist Workers Party.
Yeah.
Slightly like Trotskyites, Maoists.
Yeah, the one I was in was hardcore Maoist Stalinist.
Stalinist.
Well, they wouldn't cop to it, but that was what they were. They said they were Maoists. But yeah, God.
So do you remember going to the National Convention in Birmingham?
Vaguely. I know I went.
You remember
No, definitely not.
Did you go?
Yes.
Do you remember anything from it?
Absolutely. I remember the most two things that were majorly important. And I haven't been back to Birmingham since, so I really can't say this, but right next to the church, the bombed church.
16th Street.
16th Street, there was a hotel.
Gaston's Motel.
Gaston's Motel.
Yeah.
and we stayed right in that block, but I don't think we stayed there. But anyway, they had this big to-do. There was an arena or a place, but the thing that was wonderful was that the entertainment was James Brown and the Famous Flames.
Yes, that's right. Now that you mention it. But they had us working. We were staffing the thing, right?
Yeah, I just was blown away. I thought, whoa, that's the best thing I've seen. So anyway, no, so one was seeing the church, because that was only, I mean, it was still boarded up and lots of...
Still only four years after.
It wasn't that much. It was 2 years.
2 years, right. 65, yeah. 2 years.
2 years after. It was still boarded up, and there was lots of... And the other was seeing James Brown and the Famous Flames. It's amazing the gaps that you don't remember. You know,
all right, so I'm going to come back to the question of the...
Oh.
Think about Birmingham in 63. Mm-hmm. 2 years later, they could hold the SCLC convention in a white, in what had been a white-only auditorium or building or hotel.
Was it? I don't think so.
Yeah, it was some you know, normal civic thing that would normally never have been. That was my recollection.
I was thinking it was more like what the Apollo was in Harlem. I mean, it was a place that was traditional.
Even so, the fact that 2 years later SCLC could have its convention and there was no police harassment, nobody was arrested, there was no Klan attack, so.
But I thought that, I mean, my memory is that was also part of the... I mean, it was a challenge to the city of Birmingham. I thought, Jim Orange and those guys were all ready. They wanted to go to Birmingham and they wanted a show. I mean, which was great. I mean, Jim Bevel.
Yeah.
Those guys.
God, Orange was such a great guy.
Yeah. Huge.
Yeah, he passed a few years ago.
Yeah. And I haven't heard anything. Bevel went through a strange...
Oh, yeah.
Very strange whatever.
I wouldn't say he went through. I think he was always strange.
Well, that's probably true.
But, yeah, he got hooked up with Lyndon LaRouche.
Yep.
Gee, wow.
He ran as Lyndon LaRouche's vice president in some election. He didn't
Virginia,
win.
Virginia, I think.
No, it was he did. LaRouche was campaigning for president.
Right, but I think that Bevel ended up in Virginia.
Oh yeah, I think you're right.
Is LaRouche still around?
I haven't heard anything.
Who
is Lyndon LaRouche?
Oh,
still
I have
around?
Not. Yeah. Haven't
heard the name in a long time. Mm-hmm. So, well, looky here, I'm going to have to run on.
Yeah, that's
take
okay.
Care
yeah.
Of,
now, what this plan is dinner tonight, right?
Yeah.